Okay, so we would we're up to Perek Beit, and we talked last week about the transition between Perek Aleph and Perek Beit, and came up with, I think, some beautiful, beautiful insights about what's happening here in terms of the relationship with Atar Shasta and with the king, and how it is that this special relationship that's created with the Malchus is being utilized by him for the Binyan of Yerushalayim, which we understand is the Binyan of the Medina, particularly, and not of the Beis HaMikdash, which had been done with Ezra. And therefore, what we have really is a tremendous change. So that in Ezra, as we know, the whole focus on Ezra, the Meshech HaDorot, is Ezra as the new Moshe Rabbeinu, essentially. Safra, Rabban, Yisrael, same language. We speak about Moshe, we speak about Ezra. But when we talk about Nehemiah, we talk about something very, very different. We talk about possibly a political relationship, which was entirely built, I think Rav Dani suggested that it was common at the time for the individual who was appointed to be the Yayin, to be maybe the Yayin to the Melech, the Sarah Yayin. It was actually a word for the defense minister, because the protection of the king, which included the tasting of the wine and so on, the protection of the king included the overall protection of the Malchus. So that perhaps it was truly a political interrelationship. So if then we could start again from the beginning of the perek, if it reminds you of something, please indicate. So let's start from Pasuk Aleph. Vayi b'chodesh Nisan shnat esrim l'artavshasta ha-melech yayin lefanav. So we find ourselves, as we saw in the transition, at a party. And it was a party that he understood months before was going to happen one day. And all of a sudden it happened. And this was the Yayin Lefanav that I was waiting for, essentially. This was my job, as the closing of the perek before ends, the parsha before. Vani hayiti mashkal ha-melech. V'sata yayin, and I bring it. V'etna la-melech v'lo hayiti ra lefanav. Which many different levels, one of which is that because of the fact that I was in a special state of being allowed to drink with them, and they were matir, shtia with akum, and of course the whole iser for drinking with akum, even though where there's no inyan of yayin esach, is an inyan of mixing and of coming to intermarry and so on. So I didn't have any of that. I was not ralafanav. The ralafanav indeed was true about the Jews in the same place in Shushan just a short while before in the reign of Achashverosh. And that was Lamelech and Shoval Anicham. They won't even drink the wine that you touch. They'll throw it on the ground as if it's garbage. The other pshatim was Lo Yiti Ralafanav. Up until this time, there was no indication that I was in any way unhappy or that I was the type of person that even could be unhappy. I was always on the up. Again, I'm just going to review the pshatim that appeared to us last week to be the most reasonable. And that something had changed over here, because it was the first time that the Yayin Lefanav was indeed a personal party in which he had the Shegal that was their Lefanav, even if it's not the Malbim Shegal, which is Esther Amalka. But it's a personal moment with the king. And indeed, the derech at that time is that the king did not drink openly. He drank beyond a mechitza, which may very, very well be a reflection on the change back after Achashverosh, because at that point, we find that he indeed was tremendously insulted by Vashti, who said that here he is getting drunk in public, whereas my family, it says, the Kobal Alpha. I mean, he was drinking right in front of the whole party, and he could hold his liquor better than anybody. So that when it comes to Belshazzar, it comes to Vuchadnezzar, it could be that this was a change, that the king really suffered in terms of public relations by being high in public. And so they made it different. And here we have a special party, and all of a sudden the king understands that something's wrong, and I'm bothered by something. He sees that it's not physical. He understands that it's something in my heart, deep in my heart, that I've never let out before. Voira harbe miot, which again we understood to mean very, very different from the way the Mefarshim explain here. But Vayirar Be'Me'od doesn't mean, like Rashi says, that I was frightened because he was thinking that I must be planning a murder. Or like the Malbim learns, that I was frightened because there's a standing order to always be looking happy when you're around the king, or any of the other pshatim, but very partial, Vayirar Be'Me'od, that when a person is waiting for a moment to happen, and that was keneged uvechol yom v'yom Mordechai mitalech. This was his b'chol yom v'yom. That when it happens, there's a tremendous sense of shock in which all of the investment and the mental investment, the emotional investment suddenly comes to a head, and the reaction is very profound. Oh my God, this is it. So it's, I was very afraid. V'omar l'melech ha'melech l'olam yichyeh. And as we saw later on, he says, Feirish, that my kavana is a tefillah. And here I responded to the melech, and I said to him, Madua lo yerufanai. It isn't something personal. I mean, how would I not be affected? Asherair be kivot avotai charevav ushareu ukluvaish. That the complete churban of where I come from, where my family hails from, is still going on. This is exactly the same lashon that basically Esther says, Eichacha ucha v'ra'iti b'ra'a asher sa'atami. How am I supposed to survive this? How is it not supposed to have an impact on me? Doesn't matter how much I would like to just be thinking about you and be happy, but in saying this, he is basically giving the insight into what Yerushalayim means. So he's giving the sense of a Medina. This is like more than just something that I like. It's the Cain in the Lashon of the Rabbeinu Bachya. It's the place where, it's my nest. It's the yesod of everything that I have. And in losing it, it wouldn't be honest for me to pretend to be happy. So if I'm opening up now, and it's because of the fact that lo hayiti ra lefanecha, I need to open up completely, in all honesty. So the melech, and this is an amazingly disarming question, where the melech says, okay, drama queen, I got the message, you know. Can you just tell me the bottom line, you know? I like the drama, it's really nice, but now let's cut it, and let me hear what it is precisely you'd like. And that, too, is like extremely honest. It's almost as if, like, you know, let's cut the garbage, and there's no chanifa between it. Yeah, I like the hamelech l'olam yichyeh jazz and all of that, but can you just tell me, like, what is this conversation really about? Because it could very well be that the king was makir in the tremendous emotional response. It's very difficult to hide that. You know, if this is the moment you've been planning for, and you're grabbing an opportunity, you can pretty well figure that someone who is a king will be sensitive enough to know that something is going on and that this guy is looking for this opportunity. I said, okay, I understand your emotional reaction. I see your tension. I understand that you're trembling. What's going on? Tell me what's up. And this we saw already. We had the same anhaga when it came to Yosef, and the Medrash brings equivalent anhagas elsewhere, that this is something adraba. That is mechuvan to Malchus, because Malchus has to be sensitive to these type of things. And that's why in his response, he's saying that, look, it's something really very profound. I'm not going to bother you with something that I can get over on my own. Exactly. The parallels to Esther are beautiful. And so again, the next parallel to Esther, beautiful parallel, was ve'et palel elohei ha'shamayim. Now, obviously, he didn't break off in the middle of the king and say, okay, king, give me a minute, will you please? Don't talk to God. I'll be back in a sec. Put it on hold. That's obviously not what it means. So, et palel Elohei HaShamayim means that this is my tefillah to Elohei HaShamayim, exactly the way that Chazal understand that kol melech that we find in the Megillah is a reference to Melech Machem Wachim here, too. So, I was speaking to Elohei HaShamayim at the same moment that I said, Omar l'melech, imal l'melech tov, exactly what Esther said, imal l'melech tov. Im yitav avdecha lefanecha, v'im tov v'anochi be'inav. Word for word. Asher tishlacheni al Yehuda l'kivrot avotai, so I'd like you to send me, and ve'evnena. The idea has to be good. Obviously, I don't want it as a personal favor, The only thing that's personal here is that I was wondering if Yitav Avdecha Lefanecha, and those are two madrigas. First of all, the idea is a very sensitive issue, because remember again, the political context is that Koresh was Mevatel the Malacha because of the letters that had arrived. Now, the nature of what his response was is he sent a letter putting a stop to the Aveda, any further Aveda is in Yerushalayim, which seems, again, that we're up against the big Mordechai and Esther problem, which is, as Achashverosh responds, and that is, what can I do, you know? Any ktav that was nechtam b'tabat ha-melech, ein la-hashiv. So, of course, he'd already written something which was ein la-hashiv, so what exactly would you want me to do? So there's got to be an imam melech tov that has to be very carefully balanced. And I think the imam melech tov over here is much more powerful than just the idea in Esther. Because in Esther, the imam melech tov is in fact a willingness to trust me to be able to handle that little problem. And that was the ilmola yigrot harishonot and the fact that they were left open and so on and so forth. What's interesting over here is that Koresh's letter only says that there is an injunction against building until I decide otherwise, until it is essentially tov be'inai that we go on. Because look, I'm accepting a letter that claims that the Jews are in rebellion. I don't know that. So this is an injunction. Stop building. And then we'll see what happens. Okay, fine. So maybe now it's 14 years later. And maybe now, I mean, despite the fact he's a different person, it doesn't matter. He's acting as the melech. And therefore, I say, if really it's tov beinecha, because you can't just do this as a political sop, because the entire letter was real. So if it's really tov beinecha, then I would like to be the one appointed to do this. All of this is a brief review. We did this transition last week. Vayomer li ha-melech v'ashegal yoshevet etzlo. Ad matai yiyem ha-halacha u-matai tashuv. This is so striking that the Malbim actually learns that this was an insertion of the Shegal. Because he learns that, look, Nehemiah never answers this question. It says vayitav lifnei ha-melech, but I thought, we've been talking about the Melech, and the Melech just asked me a question, and I never answered the question. So why does it say Vayitav Levzei HaMelech V'Yishalcheni V'Etad Al-Hazman only afterwards? And therefore, it seems that actually these words were triggered by the Shegal, who was trying to put in some additional pressure on the king. So when will you be going? You know, when will you be coming back? There's nothing to discuss about the essential point, is there? Honey? No, of course not. And so on. So that would mean the melech all along, it was vayitav lifnei ha-melech, and the viyatino lozman was to fulfill whatever additional issues that had to do with the shegal. The alternative that we understood to the Malbim was that even so, it would be exactly the kind of thing that the woman of the household, the queen, would ask. You know, I mean, I've been trusting you. I don't like my husband to be here unprotected. I would like to know what more details. You know these men, he'll just say yes, and then what's going to happen? So give me the information. Fine, so we have to know those men afterwards. But the important thing is, I sensed already when I got that question, it was over, and it was Vayitav Lefnei HaMelech, and he actually liked the idea. That's why it's a Im Tova Davar. That's what we want. We don't want a shikul that has to do with something that's not Vayitav. So Vayitav means that he held that this was Tov, obviously, in his position as the son of Esther. It's not so unreasonable that he should actually find that it's Tov. So Vomar La Melech. So then I got down to the brass tacks. After Vetrolisman, Ima La Melech Tov Igrot Yitnuli Apachavot Ever Hanahar Asher Yaaviruni Adasher Avo Yehuda. Now the meaning in those days that what appears from archaeological records, is that it was a kind of Pony Express kind of thing. In other words, because each one of the governors, those are the Pachot, remember, at that time, Me'av, Esrim, Ve'sheva, Medinot, and so on, so we had different governors that were called the Pachot. Each one had a certain amount of independence and decisions. And, of course, a local force, police force, army, and so on. And so what they would do is, if someone was on a national mission, each place that he came would provide protection during the period that he was in that Medina. And then Yaviruni, pass me on, that would be the Lashon of Yaviruni, pass me on to the next people down the line. Okay, so he's going through these various Medinot on the way. So the fact that I have, obviously, a honor guard that's from you, but I also want the involvement of everybody along the way. Now, there may be very good reason for this, because it means that by the time he got to Jerusalem, the word had gotten out that this was a sanctioned trip. And we're going to see very shortly how important the word getting out was and why it needed to be sanctioned in such a way. And furthermore, I also would want an Igeret El Asaf, Shomer HaPardes HaShel HaMelech. So the word Shomer HaPardes most understand, literally, the one who is in charge of the person that takes care of the forests. Because I am going to be asking for a significant amount of construction materials, and I want them from you. Now, the Gemara in Erechin asks how it was mutter to take the wood from the melech, because, after all, we had that whole complicated discussion, which becomes zogeh very much halacha, what type of things a goy is allowed to dedicate to the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara takes for granted that even though, we could answer him that he's not a goy, but that, of course, he's a goy, because for all intents and purposes, we're dealing with the Malchus Paras. We're not dealing with an individual. So why aren't we chayshish for the things that we're chayshish? Either, according to some Rishonim, we're chayshish that they're going to use their involvement as an opportunity to create problems. And so the more involved they are, the more they pretend to want something, the more likely they are to be in enough control to demand, well, why don't we look over these plans? So the committees become the delaying tactics. That's one approach. Another Rishonim, the approach is that they may subsequently, if they were involved in the beginning, they may claim that this was our project, not your project, and therefore it's basically not your Yerushalayim. It's Yerushalayim, the representative of the king of Paras in the Pachot Yehuda, nothing to do with the Jews. So the Gemara asks, then how come he was ready to ask for the Igeret El Asaf from this pasuk? The Gemara brings in everything. And the Gemara says the famous Teretz that appears in a few places, Benogeya Adizin Yonim, like tearing down a structure of the Beis HaMikdash, or just did before rebuilding it. And that is that a Malchus, even if it says, I'm going to cut a highway through a mountain, they don't pull out. Once there's a commitment, there's too much involved. You try to get a project canceled, even though it turns out to be a total bandugo, it's overrun its cost by 40 times, they never cancel it. It's amazing. It just keeps going and going and going for decades. And therefore, the same thing is true. We don't have to worry that they are going to change their minds. Whatever was initially the intent and whatever they announced,
Help.
Mute yourself. Danny, help. That is what they will continue to do. I hope I'm coming across clearer than that. That's pretty bad. Okay, so I need a letter like that. And what I want is, I want wood. And the purpose of this word, wood, is lekarot et sharei abira shel habayit. Number one, sharei abira. Now, we know in the Gemara, there's tremendous machlokas. It's Rish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan. It comes up often. What is the bira? So, is the bira a particular mokom hayasham b'shem bira, like Rish Lakish, like Rabbi Yochanan says? Or is the bira the name for the Beis HaMikdash itself, which is actually what Rish Lakish holds? So, in one way or the other, it would mean that the sharei bira, it could mean either that the gateways to the Beis HaMikdash itself did not have coverings, which would have meant that they weren't allowed to build something that would be a fortress, and that's what a birah means. And after all, Ezra had persuaded Melech that their only interest is in a spiritual center. And we know, as the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra, that even when they rebuilt it, the king insisted that it be rebuilt with materials in it that he could press a button and explode when he saw, which that's the eighth that's in the wrong place. Then it would be easy to get rid of it if it turns out that they really were not sticking to the original plan. And when they canceled, because of the letters, it's probable that they canceled anything that resembled a bira. We don't want a bira. We don't want anything that represents a fortress, a stronghold. It shouldn't be a stronghold. The whole idea of rebuilding Yerushalayim is dafka, yes, to provide a stronghold. And therefore, I'm telling you straight up front, we're going to need building materials, either for the Sharia bira, the Beis Mikdash itself, which would mean that they hadn't covered, as the Rishonim say over here, they hadn't finished the gates to the Harabayas and to the Azora, and that was because of the Sitna. Or it may mean that they weren't allowed to build this fortress, which we know from in later years, obviously we know from Josephus, from reconstructions, we know that there was a tremendous mitzuda. So I need that too. And indeed, Vavar Pachot Ever HaNahar, Vetz Nolem Tigrot HaMelech. I came to the Pachvot and I gave them these letters. Now, what is the meaning of Vayishlachim Yamelech Sarechayel Ufarashim? Is it that, as some learn, when they gave me the soldiers that had been demanded in the letter, that to me was the equivalent of Vayishlachim Yamelech? Is it that the Melech was Sharleachim me up until I came to the Pachvot because I only had asked for these letters from that point on? And at that point, the Melech's Sarei Chayel for Hashim went home. Or is the point, perhaps, as we suggested earlier, and that is that the very fact that the king had sent with me Sarei Chayel for Hashim, so he was accompanied by knights. This is very Marshim, his entry and the gvul of each one of these pachot, and it was meant to make an impact. And the letters, therefore, that were given were an insistence that each level of the territory and every different country with every different pachvot needs to be involved to the extent of committing their own forces to this, which explains the next pasuk. The next pasuk begins our story, and it's something of an introduction, which we suddenly drop and we get back to later. So what happens is, and what we're suggesting is that this was done on purpose. Vayishma Sanvalat Hachorani Vituvia Eved Amoni Vayera Lehem Ra'ah Gedola Asher Ba Adam Levakesh Tova Livnei Yisrael. He hasn't even arrived yet, you see. Because in the next pasuk it says Va'avol Yerushalayim. So that means that it may very well be that the purpose of his warning all of this was to put Sanvalat and Tovia on notice, which is very strange, because as we will see when he comes into Yerushalayim, he bedavka does everything very secretively so that they won't be aware of what his plans are, which means that he wants them to be aware that there is obviously a comeback from what happened 14 years ago, and that for some reason somebody new is coming to take the place of the limited success of Ezra, and it's important that he be known, but at the same time it's very important not to know the specific plans. That's a pretty strange kind of thing. I mean, if you want to keep yourself from the political problems, then don't say anything, unless, of course, sometimes saying something throws them off. In other words, if indeed I were coming to do something that was absolutely shocking, I wouldn't let you know now, would I? I wouldn't come. I would come with the CIA. I wouldn't come with the knights, you know, of the round table. And I wouldn't bring letters to every place where you have spies. And by the way, this Sanballat character is no small... To us, it sounds okay, like it's small potatoes. But, I mean, the fact is both Sanballat and Tovia are sufficiently present in history that we actually know about them. Not from Nehemiah, As I mentioned last week, we actually have letters that are stamped Sanballat, and Sanballat at the it says Pach. It says in old Ivri print, Sanballat Pachat Shamer, which means that he was the guy that was in charge, apparently, of the Shomron and all points going towards Eretz Yisrael at one point, which is a pretty big chiddush. Not only that, the same letter mentions all of Sanballat's family, and they all have Jewish names, which is really weird if he's being presented here as somebody who is not even Jewish, and he's an enemy of the Jews, and so on. All of his names were Dafka Jewish names. I mean, modern Jewish names. Dalia, that's a cute name. Dalia, Shalmia, you know. And not only that, we know we're going to see later on the Pasuk that he was heavily involved in the Jewish community, because basically he had entered into families of the Kohen Gadolah illicitly, of course, according to this. And we'll see that he was also was someone that had a lot of influence because he was related through marriage to Ben Arbach. There's something strange about this guy. The same thing is true of this Tovia. Tovia is somebody that comes up, he's so Choshev that there's tombs of Tovia that have been identified on the other side of the Yarden. And what's amazing is that over here he's called Tovia Ha'eved Ha'amoni. And Tovia Ha'eved Ha'amoni, the word Eved shows up again, because on the tombs, the place is called Miftzar Ha'eved. This is so weird. So it's like the place where the Eved has set himself up, Katzar Labad, is the in Aramaic. And that may have something to do with what over here appears to be just a way to speak about them in a low-class fashion. The guy was Choshev, we're calling him Eved Avoni. You know, so he also had intermarried. That means that he didn't have a right to marry, because it's if we're calling him an Eved, it means Rashi is Jewish, but maybe he's Jewish as an Eved. It's not so clear. But the important point over here is that these people, I wanted them to know, Vayera lahem ra'a gedola, and they were miserable. They were miserable to hear Asher ba adam levakesh tova levnei Yisrael, which means they had no idea what my mission was. In other words, I wanted them to know that I was coming, but this was cover for my coming. Had I been coming and they would have heard that I was coming, then it was very likely that they would have immediately figured that there's a chance that there's been a turnaround on the walls of Yerushalayim, and that already could be dangerous, as we'll see in the next psukim. Masha'ein Kane, they heard that somebody is coming on a fact-finding mission, Levakesh Tova Livnei Yisrael, a fact-finding mission for the king, and he wants to find out what can be done to improve the situation in the land of Israel. Okay, how much are people going to be upset about John Kerry coming, you know, as another idiot shows up? It's upsetting because maybe some good could come of it, but it's unlikely. So that would mean that he did something very clever. He arranged the entire thing in such a way as to give him a cover. And my cover was that I was coming on a fact-finding mission. And indeed, Vava Yerushalayim, Sham Yamim Shlosha, for the next 3 days, I didn't do a darn thing. I just sat around, you know, settling in, typical diplomatic mission, in which all they're interested is in their own ideas. Oh, by the way, I forgot before, when it was Shari Abirav, and finished that pasuk, Ula Chomata Ir, I want to rebuild the walls around Yerushalayim, and I want to build a home that I'm going to be living in. Ula Bayit Asher Avoy Lav. Now note that he doesn't say Abayit for myself, which means that he wants this to be a diplomatic mission, right? So in other words, I'm going to be building a home which will be available for diplomats coming from the king to live in, and that's the house I'm going to be coming to. So basically what he's talking about is the opening of a consulate. That's the idea. So this is what we need. We need the things that will give me a place to come, not chas shalom, I want a house. Vayitem ha'melech yad Elohai atova alai, which becomes his code words later on. And the king gave me mamish, like with an open hand, it was coming directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that apparently had favored our mission. Okay, anyway, getting back to here. I'm sorry for all of this background, but it turns out that it's a very important background. I don't want to take up too much of your time. Okay, I didn't do a darn thing. Now, the first thing that I do, indeed I do as if I were working for the CIA. The change is so bold that it's obvious that what he was talking about was a brilliant plan, carefully calibrated in the beginning to present a picture of somebody who isn't going to do anything, is going to sit around, as fact-finding missions often do. They're, you know, a good excuse for free air tickets and hotels and so on and so forth. Nobody ever has to do anything on them. And that's what he got them to think for 3 days. Now, after the 3 days, what do? I get up in the middle of the night. In the middle of the night, nobody knows what's going on. So akum laila aniva anashima atim, had a very few close men with me. Lo he got it tiladam, I didn't tell anybody. Not even the people who were with me. I didn't tell anybody. Ma Elohai notena libila sot Yerushalayim. So he views his mission as Yad Elohai Tovalai. He views his mission as divinely inspired, that in fact it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu who was Noten Elibo. He does not see this as his own plan. He sees this as something that is a direct result, exactly as Mordechai said, Umi Odeim Le'et Azot Igatam Halchut, exactly how he felt. What in the world was I put into the position of drinking wine that's usher, and of being the one who becomes the drinking partner of the king, and suddenly the whole thing is introduced to me when people come from Yerushalayim and give me detail? Now we have a true listener. I always find it's the kids that listen much better. And therefore, I don't share that with anybody, you see, because that is my personal mission in life, and I wouldn't share it. But obviously, I don't want anybody to know, because, in fact, my real purpose is very different from my ostensible purpose. So my real purpose is Billy B, and my ostensible purpose is Levakesh Tova L'Bnei Yisrael. When you see the perek like this, it makes tremendous, tremendous sense. As a matter of fact, we know that the big downfall of Nehemiah, Luderes, was the fact that he let go of that clarity at one point, and he said the word Zochreni Elohai L'Tova, remember me for good. And we'll see what drove him to that. But obviously, if the idea was that it was Notena Libi, Lasot Yerushalayim, he cannot be Marzik Tova L'Atzma. And because of that, says the Gemara, since he mentioned himself, you ask to be remembered for good. Because of that, the Sefer Nehemiah is not called Nehemiah, at least in our Seder HaTanach. This is a Goyish name, Nehemiah. And instead, it's called Ezra. Because in being Mavakish, a shame, he loses his shame. And you'll notice that one of the big ideas of shame is remarkable. Chomot beveiti uvechomotai yad v'shem, which means that the idea of the zecher for himself and the zochreni comes more from the esek in Chomot Yerushalayim than anywhere else. Why would that be true? That is something that is one of the grand lessons of this entire sefer, I think. But it's clear that there's a tremendous drive on his part to be zochet too, which because of costs him everything. So he says, I've got nobody with me except a few men. Behema eini mi, I can't take any animals with me because of the noise that they make. And I don't want to attract any attention at all. Ki im ha behema asher ani rochev ba. I had only one animal, the animal on which I was riding. Now, why in the world? What would it be so terrible to walk if everybody else was walking? Was he such a big shot? He can't walk. And why does he take a chance with that one animal? All this we will see when we examine, for sure we seem to have run out of time here, when we examine what it is that he does in the middle of the night, and what happens when Sanballat and Tobiah find out about it, and we'll need, I think, to think very strongly about who cares. I mean, like, you know, who cares about these little people that we don't know? What do I mean? This is a book. Is this an archaeological book? Or we need to know the names of these guys? It's the same thing. The names. Ezra goes through the names. I mean, okay, I understand the names. You're talking about Mishmarot HaKunah, Mishmarot HaLeviyah. That has impact lederes. The names of the Seine Yisrael. I mean, it's halachi. Seine Yisrael, Yisrael. What do you want to add also? The Choranim. By the way, what Chorani is unclear. Most learn it means that he came from Beit Choron, which would make sense if indeed he was the Pach of Shemer at one time. Some suggest Chorani means, he's not none of them are Farshim, but the academics, maybe he's from Choran, a Chorani. Chor maybe is just a Lashon of Hashivas, because we see that Chorim is going to be called, like it was in Esther, Chori Chori, the ones who are free, free of taxes, they're Choshev. Whatever, okay, but in any event, who cares? In other words, what we describe here in Nehemiah are places, are names, are details that have been lost in the footnotes of history, if that. Once in a while we can reconstruct who these people are because we just fortuitously stumble upon something that has their name on it, deep underground somewhere in a dig. I mean, it's like, who cares? No, I mean, it's not as if, you know, they were great kings. I mean, I need to know that they're upset that the Jews are getting anything done. I need to know the name and condition of every single wall in Jerusalem and every place. I mean, it's amazing. An amazingly detailed, long-winded book which doesn't have much drama. Well, what's the point? What do we learn from all of it?